Hello and welcome back to Fintech Podden. We have arisen from the dead and we are back. It's Gustav speaking here, and with me as always I have
Johan over here.
Yes, hello, hello.
Hello. How are you, Johan?
All good. It has been way too long since we recorded an episode, so happy to be back here.
Yes, same from me. But I mean, before this episode, we sat down and tried to understand why haven't we made an episode for such a long time? And I mean, there are maybe several reasons. Among other reasons, we both joined new jobs at the time. I think it was around March or something in 2022. We had joined a bit earlier than that, but that can be one of the causes that we had new things to focus on. What else?
Yeah, and I mean, we have recorded over 100 episodes, not published all of them, but recorded over 100. So I think we maybe just thought that we needed some well-deserved rest. But we have been resting. And as you said, we have been working on some new places as well that we maybe can just quickly cover here as well. I think it's relevant to the things we will discuss in the podcast coming up. So what have you been up to work-wise, Gustav?
Yeah, but before that, I just want to ask you, do you think it has anything to do with the boom and bust of the corona? Was the Fintech Podden busting alongside with everything else?
I think the trend line was definitely one-to-one, I think. Like we kind of took the pause when the market also took the pause and went down. Maybe it's a bit relevant to that as well. Yeah. So hopefully this is the start on the uprise again then.
I mean, it cannot have been unnoticed to anyone that you kind of lost a bit momentum when you stopped seeing fintech in the news. You saw much less venture capital into new fintechs and so on. So maybe that is one reason as well. But yeah, to your question, I've been and still I am very much into working at Moralis, where I work as a product manager. And for you who don't know what Moralis is, we are a Web3 infrastructure provider. So we have a lot of different APIs to read data from many different blockchains. The latest product that we released was actually a B2C product, which is called Moralis Money, which is more like a data tool for, you can think of traders within the crypto space that want to get data on different projects and so on. And there we have many different, you have a portal which you log into as a user, and you can scan different tokens and look at how many buyers have bought that token, how many experienced buyers, net liquidity, and there's like hundreds of other data points. So, and that has been also a great success. So yeah, I'm still, and maybe more than ever, into crypto, actually. Maybe not surprising for some of you who listen. But yeah, that's what I've been doing and still am doing, and looking forward to be doing for the coming years, as we have grown pretty well the last 2 years, and we are very well funded. So hopefully we can ride out this kind of bear market, which we're going to talk a little bit about later on in this episode. But what about you, Johan? You also joined a new company.
Yeah, exactly. So I joined a company called Ventures. Ventures is a Nordic and Baltic startup studio. So we work and invest in very early stage startups. So during the last year and a half, I've been working with a couple of different fintech companies that we have been building from scratch. So that has been super interesting to see and launch product in this market. Just a reflection is that in the early stage of the fintech and the whole early stage startup ecosystem, there's a lot of things still going on. And there's a lot of really amazing founders, and there's quite a lot of capital available still. So even if the later stage market is a bit on hold or on pause, I think the early stage is still where things happening, and I think the coming years will be super exciting to follow. And I think we will talk more about this in the upcoming episodes as well.
Yeah, and it's like many say, right, that it's when it's a bear market, it's time to build. And it's really a time where you get to focus more as a founder, I think, on what is actually worth your time to, or like to really build something that's usable and successful. It's actually greater to do it when the market is a bit calm, because then you really have the time. You don't get distracted by all events. Maybe it's a bit calmer and so on. So yeah, that's interesting. Anyway, what else has happened since we stopped?
Yeah, I mean, like as you said in the beginning, no one could have not noticed what has happened in the overall market when it comes to especially late stage fintechs. Like we talked about Klarna in a couple of episodes, and I think during the last year and a half or 2 years, the valuation of Klarna went from quite high. I think it was close to $50 billion to down 85%, I think, from the peak to where it is today. So that is not only have happened to Klarna, it has been a couple of later stage startups that has seen that fall in valuation. So that is one thing that has happened that has impacted the ecosystem quite a lot, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I saw some tweet guy who had put together different companies who have gone down like 80 to 90% in their valuations. And it's just remarkable how it's gone from the top of the Corona quantitative easing peak until today in valuations. And I think some of the most affected ones are, of course, like privately venture capital funded, the high growth that really had this case with to be valued at that high valuations. So that's really interesting. But you also had some insights on Nubank, right?
Yeah, so Nubank is a Brazilian fintech bank, you can say. They have a banking license. So in some news from the South American market is that Nubank has now close to half of the population in Brazil using them. So this is a fintech that during the last 5 to 10 years has been really expanding. I think they have Warren Buffett as a investor among others. So they have really been showing that it's still possible for new fintech players to enter and expanding in markets. So I think that is one of the more successful cases of a challenger bank entering a market and then expanding heavily and taking market share from the incumbents. But I think like this is really an edge case. If you look at many other challenger banks, I don't think we have seen this type of success in too many other places. Like taking a look in Europe, we have a couple of challenger banks that we have been covering before, such as like Revolut, we have Luna. I don't think we have seen close to this market penetration from any other players. Or what do you think, Gustav, about this overall trend?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the stock chart actually of New Holdings, which is the New York Stock Exchange listed company for Nubank. And obviously they are down like 50, 60% the last 5 years, or maybe they haven't been listed that long, but since the start. And but this year they're up 67%. So it's definitely maybe like an outlier compared to many other. But yeah, I think it's super interesting, and it's really remarkable, as you said, how they can have such a big part of the market share in is it mainly Brazil or whole
South America? Yeah, I think it's mainly in Brazil, but they are currently expanding. I think I read something about Chile as the next country, and I think the goal is to really become a pan-South American banking player, kind of. But they are definitely have the majority of the customers today in Brazil.
And another one is the payments giant like Adyen, which I think is like kind of a cooler competitor to Worldline and so on. And they have they're down to basically where they were IPOing for many years ago in their valuations, from being up, I don't know what, like 500, 600, 700%, and they'd lost like 40% for a few weeks ago. And I haven't really been fully understanding why, but something around that the expectations of their growth were much higher than the actual result were. But that's just an interesting thing. They dropped 40% in one single day.
I read somewhere, like, they are like the largest competitor to Stripe, which I think Stripe we all know about. It's not publicly listed, so, but everybody believes that the valuation of Stripe has also went down quite a lot. But what's interesting is that Stripe is a bit more heavy in the American market and Adyen is more heavy in the European market.
Yeah.
And that has some, like, cost-wise, some large competitive edges for Adyen, that the salary cost for European engineers is quite a lot lower than the Silicon Valley-based ones. But now Adyen has, during the last year, expanding heavily in the US without having too much success. But they have built up large teams in the US, and then they have seen the cost base increase quite a lot as well. So that has changed how the whole cost structure of the company has been looking. So that could be one of the reasons why the valuations are changing quite a bit, kind of, because the whole team behind looks different now than for a year ago.
Yeah, that's interesting. But then we also had another rumor. This is especially interesting for us in the Nordics, and maybe especially for me, since I worked at Lunar before. But they're said to be maybe merging with Monzo, which is a UK-based fintech, right?
Challenger Bank,
yeah. And it's said that they have been offered a deal before, also with Instabank, which is from Norway, I think, Challenger Bank. But now there are new rumors that Lunar is possibly merging with Monzo. And I mean, maybe that is a saver for Lunar, as it has probably been very, very challenging for the last few, maybe 1-2 years in the new market circumstances.
Yeah, and like, I think that we will see a lot more mergers in this, like, the Challenger Bank market, because I think we all know that the customer acquisition cost for the financial service industry is quite high. So a lot of this Challenger Bank has been focusing on acquiring customer for a very high cost. I think Revolut still has like 700 SEK as a bonus if you invite a person that starts to use the service. And I think that is, like, on the total, like, a quite low customer acquisition cost for a financial service player. So like, there has quite a high cost associated with the growth, and I think we will see the mergers now happening because they are running out of money and they need to streamline and so on. So it will be super interesting to see who will be the large European players in this market.
Definitely. Yeah, exciting to follow that market. Another market that has also happened a lot since we made our last episodes is of course the crypto industry. And here we have, as I assume many already know about, but FTX, who was this giant that collapsed with their founder Sam Bankman-Fried, who didn't do everything right, but maybe used the company's money to gamble and so on. In a similar way, the founder of Celsius made with the depositors to Celsius. He basically gambled away the money on different speculative investments. And I mean, these were giant, multi-billion dollar valued crypto fintechs. And the same goes with the BlockFi, which is like a same kind of company as Celsius, where you can deposit your crypto and get the interest rate on it. So that's really, really big collapses.
Did you use any of them, Gustav?
I used Celsius, actually. And we got to say, Luna also collapsed, another big one. But did you use any, Johan?
Yeah, I also used Celsius and also used FTX. So I was quite heavily hit of this downfall of the players here.
Yeah, I had a few $1,000 in Celsius. And now, about 1.5 years later or something like that, it looks like you're gonna have some of the funds back, actually, around 60 to 80% in the company's Chapter 11 process, there has been a proposal for getting money back, basically, or you can get a part, like stocks, in the new company that will be started after the whole circus is done. But what's interesting here is, like, this founder of Celsius, who's called Alexander Machinsky, he got arrested earlier this summer and reportedly paid $40 million in a bond to get released. And just a few days ago, I read that his assets, both privately and in his companies, are now frozen in the US. And we'll see what happens in the court if he's... I think he's done very, very wrong, so I wouldn't be surprised if he get many years in prison. But it can also be that he somehow escapes the rules in some ways, since he have very good lawyers and probably been thinking of this before. I don't know. But one thing that have struck me with this is, like, he is a very successful entrepreneur, as it can be read, publicly at least. I don't know, privately maybe there are other circumstances that are not known, but very successful, have a lot of money, have a big family, wife, 6 children, and so on. And why do this risk? I can't understand it. Risking prison, risking this and that, but maybe there are circumstances that we don't know. I don't know. But yeah, it's just insane.
But I think it's like, it has been a bit high chaparral, the whole crypto industry, during the boom. So I guess in some sense it's quite good that it gets cleaned up a bit, so the serious players are still gonna be around, hopefully, and there will be probably a new boom coming up, but who knows, but hopefully. So for the overall market, it's kind of good, I think, that it gets cleaned out and the regulators are focusing a bit more on this. So next time, there might not be this type of downfall in multiple players at the same time, kind of, hopefully.
Yeah, exactly. And so I hope so too. And I hope that we, as an industry, in the crypto industry, have learned something from this. And one big thing is the whole movement from centralized exchanges to more decentralized alternatives, which, by the way, is like the main selling point of crypto anyway, so I think it's really good. And we'll see. Now there are rumors, I know also, that Binance, which is the largest exchange in the world, might be in trouble. But those there have been rumors about this for many, many months, maybe years. So we'll see what happens. Maybe if they collapse, I think that is like a really big thing in crypto, because they are even bigger than FTX and Celsius and BlockFi, probably combined, and so on. But should we mention a little bit about what we can think will be coming if we look a bit forward for FintechPodden?
Yeah, so the plan for FintechPodden now is that we will keep doing episodes, aiming for 1 to 2 per month, I think, is the plan going forward. Combining some more deep downs into specific areas. I think we have a couple of exciting episodes coming up, but we're also looking forward to have a lot more guests on the show. So if anybody listening in here today knows of any cool companies or person they think should join us, please just reach out to any one of us, and we will make it happen, right?
Yeah, and especially if you know about some cool fintechs that are like really building something interesting now when the market is very dry and calm. Maybe they're not so known. Maybe they are bubbling under the surface. So please reach out to us at hello@fintechpodden.com, maybe, or fintechpodden@gmail.com works as well. And we'll see. Hopefully we can have some interesting conversation with those companies.
Yeah. But I think that was everything for today, right? This was just a kind of a small teaser episode to just show that we are alive and that we are getting back into business. And hopefully you will see and hear a lot more about us in the coming months and weeks, right?
Exactly. We have not forgotten our listeners. So stay tuned for the next episode. We'll be coming, let's promise it, Johan, within a month. So now it's 10th of September. Before 10th of October, we will have another interesting episode out.
Yes.
All right. Bye-bye. And thank you.
Bye-bye.